Welcome to an all-new episode of the McFuture Podcast. This is Steve Factor, and today we're going to do something a little bit different. I was rewatching. Okay, I'll be honest. I was trying to make space on my hard drive, and I stumbled across a recording of my workshop slash keynote address at the New York Small Business Expo from, I think it was 2017. And the subject of it was, don't build a business, build a religion. As you might know or might have heard, I did an episode called The Future is Belief. This keynote was an evolutionary step towards that, but it was much more focused on helping small businesses, and people loved it. And since then, I've done corporate versions and corporate workshops. Anyway, what shocked me as I was rewatching it is how relevant it is now that all of these businesses are struggling with the lockdowns and with COVID. It's really a different way to think about your business, whatever business you might be in. And this particular keynote does exactly that. And at the end, I take people through 7 or 8 questions that can dramatically improve their business. Most of it comes through really well over audio. There might be a couple of parts where I'm referring to a chart, but if you want, you can just click on the link in the show notes and watch the YouTube version that has the video. Anyway, I think you'll enjoy it. If it's not relevant to you, I hope you pass it on to someone else who might be helped by it. And I will do a new episode this week of Mistweeted by Steve Factor. And I'm working on a brand new series on wokeness infecting the business world. Anyway, I think you'll love all of the stuff that's coming up. Don't forget to share this with others, subscribe, and review the show. So here it is. So this is literally a pie chart that is driving the future. People, innovation, and economics. Those are the three things that matter. Let's talk about innovation. And this is something everyone can relate to, right? There, in the 70s, people had maybe 50 albums. And it was great. You know, you cherished each one. You'd sit there and you'd stare at the cover and appreciate, you know, all the work that went into this and get up and flip that scratchy record. Then in the 90s, you probably had 200, maybe 300. I had 800 CDs. Then all of a sudden in 2000, 8,000 songs, and some of them are even legal, which is great. So then you get to the 2010s, you get to today, you've got millions at your disposal. If Rihanna gets hit by a bus tomorrow, she wasn't gonna come up on Shuffle Play for another year. You still got Beyonce, so you'll be fine. You will survive because you've got millions of songs at your fingertips. And if they're all on Shuffle Play, you can listen well into your 215th birthday and not hear the same song again. Now, that's interesting and everyone can relate to music, but that same surplus is happening in every single category. You look at clothing. You look at food options, certainly in the first world. The plates don't look like that in a lot of countries. You look at the number of startups that are out there that are doing kind of variations of the same thing. And then everyone's got a drawer full of these things. Maybe they're more put together than this, unless you have an anger management issue. But the idea is that you've got a lot of surplus in every single category. So a lot of futurists, they talk about abundance, right? Having this sort of land of plenty, this utopia. We're going to have to go through this first. And this saturation creates a lot of problems on the production side, right? Where all of this stuff is made in such an automated way, you don't need people to do it anymore. This is how a lot of us are, how we feel. We're sort of swimming in this sea of products and noise. You know, it's the messaging we see out there all the time. Everyone is fighting to be heard with, you know, sometimes something useful, sometimes something marginal. But the marginal product might stand out more because it screams louder or it has better marketing or hired a better PR person. So what does that mean for small business? One of the takeaways is this era of succeeding by selling other people's products is pretty much over. That is a commodity era. Anything that you can tell Alexa to fetch for you, you should not be selling because that is a commodity good. And so In some cases, you can add some value to it to get it to a level where it does stand out. But in most cases, it's a commodity. So if you're, you know, I was called yesterday by the Seattle Times to comment on the, you know, those spinners, the stress spinners that everyone has, which is a fad. And, you know, and there's a couple of people who claim that they had patents that had lapsed on it. The challenge is that, how do you defend that? You know, if you don't have the money to keep paying for the patent and you don't have the money to defend the patent, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that, you know, because in China they can make them for pennies and sell them here in bulk, and there's no way to defend that. This slide blew me away when I saw it. In 1955, the Fortune 500 represented 35% of our economy, of gross domestic product. By 2015, it became 72%. So think about that. 500 companies represent 72% of the economy. I thought that was pretty crazy. And then I looked a little bit deeper, and that's something that's not on this slide, is that 100 companies represent 50% of GDP. So the president, whoever that may be, I don't know, maybe you could name him, I can't, could take all their phone calls in two afternoons, talk to 50% of our GDP, or executives represent 50% of the economy. So think about that, how crazy that concentration has become. Now, in that environment, wages tend to go flat and capital owners get rewarded. Now, this is an illustrative slide. There's a real slide that actually shows a curve that's just like the comic, but real. And you look at this more or less flat line. This is from 1975 through 2009. This is median household income. And then if you divide the actual GDP, the gross domestic product, per capita, then you'll see a much, much higher sloping line. That means people aren't being rewarded for the work that is being generated by and the value that's being generated in the economy. You have two choices, maybe three. Either you build something super efficient, super low in labor, or you make something where you're indispensable and hyperhuman, where you amplify your humanity. As promised, we're going to touch on religion. What this shows is the younger you are, the less likely you are to be affiliated with a particular faith. So yes, the older people are more religious, younger people are less religious. And if you looked at the cohort that's even younger, the percentage is even higher. So this is a fact. And what is also a fact is religiosity hasn't gone away. Tribalism is thriving. People are tribal. Whether you look at cosplay and gaming, you look at the politics, and you know, basically politics has become like the Super Bowl for people who don't know how to play sports. Sports is, I mean, think about it, right? And then people who spend all night on Reddit or on different comment groups commenting, is Apple or Google better? I mean, 3 a.m, go to sleep, it doesn't matter. Buy both, you know, knock yourself out. But people have these passions, they haven't gone away. So what I did for you guys and for me is I tried to break down all these new religions. So I kind of did a mental exercise of all the things. And I know some of you may not be able to see all of them, so I'm gonna go through a lot of them. So I broke them into three categories. Ones that are very niche, some that apply to a broader demographic, and some that are mass market. So let's start with the niche religions. You talk about, I mentioned the tech wars. People who are into investing, they will monitor those markets religiously. They will follow these stocks, and it's a game. They're not investing, they're gambling. Doomsday preppers and conspiracy theorists. There's a lot of people who are very passionate about conspiracies. They're crazy about them, or just plain crazy. Fashion. There are people who will scroll through Instagram till their fingers bleed because they want to see the latest shoe. Beards. I learned about this recently. I feel like I have beard envy because I feel like I need to grow it out so I can put product in it. I see a man with a longer beard who probably knows what I'm talking about. Exactly. Was it Art of Shaving or something like that? You don't have to pretend like you don't know, because I know that looks very well manicured. Bitcoin. I was on a panel. I worked in financial services for a long time. So I was on a panel with a guy who was a Bitcoin disciple. It sucks all the air out of the room because this guy was so passionate and argued so hard. Now, I would make the argument that I won because a few months after we had that panel, he went to jail. So yeah, victory. So you can look it up. Charlie Shrem, he's an interesting guy. He was involved in the Silk Road scandal, if anyone cares. And gambling, I don't have to explain that to you. Drugs, all the illicit stuff. Superheroes and gaming, that is huge. People love the stuff they're addicted to. They could play for hours a night in their parents' basement with Cheetos all over their shirts. causes, people are more into causes than they've ever been. Climate, environment, diseases. If someone they know has, suffered from something, they will commit themselves to it. Gluten, pro-GMO, anti-GMO, some form of GMO. Female empowerment. There are whole organizations committed to empowering female entrepreneurs and female networking events. That is huge. Another broad demographic that people are into. I find myself doing this a lot. I feel like that's a Trumpism, and I need to stop watching people doing Trump impressions because I think we're all slowly morphing into that.
It's a New York thing.
What's that?
I didn't get that.
You didn't get that? Okay, no, great, thank you.
It's a public speaking thing.
It is a public speaking thing. Okay, thank you. All right. I thought I needed therapy, but you're way cheaper than therapy right now. So people are passionate about music. They will argue who's the best band and all that. Guns. I mean, okay, I don't need to explain that. You can shoot up a lot of people before any laws change at all. And that's how locked in people are into that as a belief system. That is a religion, just like anything else. Pets. I don't know if you know people who don't have kids but have pets. Those pets lead better lives than most kids I've ever grown up with. Okay. They have carriages and puffy pillows like I've never seen before. I didn't even know you could put something in a pillow that would be that soft that could be covered in dog hair. I'm a little jealous. My parents, what's that?
They have endowments also.
Endowments, right. fitness, cycling, running. There's whole sites committed to reviewing the tread on the new Nikes. And then you look at mass market, foodieism, same thing. People are watching short videos of food they can't taste or eat and will never cook. It's really insane. And they're all sped up. So in 15 seconds, you can watch a recipe that you will never create, ever. Alcohol. Now, they call themselves aficionados. But if it didn't have any alcohol in it, they would be drinking smoothies because they taste better. So, you're not going to go through Jack Daniels if it didn't get you messed up. You're going to go to, Dairy Queen. Pot, that's a huge movement and it's changed the country. You see laws changing that you never could have imagined changing 20 years ago. Coffee, I mean, that's that's a legalized drug. I was drinking a giant jug of coffee the other day, and then I realized, oh my God, I'm an addict. And no one cares because it's perfectly acceptable in society. diet and weight loss. So I was part of an acquisition where it was a network that was created to share photos of your weight loss. So, people want to tell their stories. And, we know about sports. Actual religion made the list, but it's been relegated to just another bullet point in a much longer list of faiths. Politics, I mentioned, and of course, kids. I mean, if you'll take care of Snuggles the cat, you'll probably feed your kid too, and maybe you'll get them something organic if they're, if you can afford it. What does that mean? The what is what typical products and services answer. What are you going to buy? What are you going to eat? I don't think people care about that. That is a commodity. What people really need answered is the why. And they need validation. They're looking for purpose. That's why you see all of these things taking off. You see yoga and meditation and, you know, opioids and all these other things. People are looking for something and they're not finding it at the stores. So our problems have moved from an outie to an innie. You know, so we're not chasing food all day anymore. We're chasing meaning. And that's a much harder chase because you don't know which direction it's gone. Oh, and why big companies can't do this. Remember when Kylie Jenner, she can stop a riot. I knew Kardashians had powers, but nothing like this. Have you guys seen the Pepsi commercial with the big controversy? Right. Yeah, it's off now, yeah. But, and I don't know if we're still operating under any publicity as good publicity, but this didn't seem like good publicity. But the reality is that big brands are ham-fisted when it comes to this stuff. They're, you know, they try to relate to individuals, but it's very, very hard. They try using influencers. They try using communities. They with a straight face, they will sit in a conference room and say, people are engaging with our brands. How many of you have ever said the phrase, I would like to leave this conference now because I'm running late to engage with Pepsi? Nobody? Strange. And they do a lot of things. They do newsjacking. They're all tactics, but they're soulless, right? Customers can't connect with mega brands. They can connect with people. We talked about market potential, niche, demographic, and mass market. And then let's talk about this axis. Quality, I'm just going to assume your product or service is of high quality. But the next level is building that emotional bond. The level after that is not just you connecting with someone on an emotional level, with a customer on an emotional level, but connecting other people to each other who share that that bond and that philosophy or whatever it is that you're selling. The last level is religiosity. That's where you can't shut someone up from recommending something that you have no intention of buying. That's how good an experience they had. And everyone knows that person, right? They're so into this thing, whatever it is, and it doesn't happen to be the thing you're necessarily shopping for or interested in, but they will not stop talking about it. So how do you get someone to that level, to the point where their friends shun them? So I'm going to give you four examples of companies that at varying stages of this have connected in these ways. So I don't know if everyone can see this, but this is a drugstore. It's called Thompson Chemists, which is in Soho here. Can you see what the two signs say? This says, all female customers shop tax-free. And this one says, all male customers are subject to 7% man tax. So, okay, the women are laughing, guys are like, So, now, an analytical initial reaction would be like, why would these guys alienate, you know, 50% of their customers or potential customers? And I'm saying they're not. If I had to guess, I bet you 80% of their clientele is women in this store, at least, and maybe more. And what they're doing is they're using an issue that people are religious about, feminism, and they're using it to their advantage. They're not going to do this to the detriment of their own business. They're not insane. You know, no one insane can even get to a printer to print a proper sign. So realistically, this is a lot of forethought goes into something like this. So they were able to ride an issue to build a connection with their customers, their existing customers. And so they now have a bond that they share beyond just the product they're selling. Let's talk about the next one, HelloFlo. Have you guys heard of this? Anybody? So HelloFlo, one hand? Okay. Yeah, so HelloFlo, they are a subscription service for tampons. So at least that's how they started out, right? So they basically took a commodity product, and then they started to build around it. So if you notice, and you know, I couldn't put the whole site in here, but there's a lot of content around this. And then, you know, classes comes before shop. And they have a community now that they're building. They're doing classes. They're trying to connect to women and women with daughters in a way that, or on a subject that you normally wouldn't even talk about. And they made a funny video that went viral. So they're tapping into something that no one really tapped into before, not in any systematic way. And they did it with a commodity product, but now they're expanding into community, into content, into ways to connect and spur those conversations in other areas of, you know, feminine hygiene and maybe other women-related issues. So they're kind of building out from this very simple core to something that builds better connection. Let's do the next one. Oh. So I don't know, have you heard of Little Bits? Anybody? A couple of people. So it's kind of like a modern day Lego, and you build different electronic projects with these pieces. And what they did was, you know, this lends itself naturally to community, right? People like to share the projects they've built, especially if they spent a bunch of time on it. They played with their kids, and they have a section here for educators. So they're creating, not only connecting their business to you, they're connecting other people who've done business with them to each other. So that's the level of community and commitment that they can get. Because when you introduce two friends of yours to each other and they meet up without you, that strengthens your relationship to both of them because you provided value in that introduction. So this is that same concept because, you know, these people are now engaging without the company having to be involved, without the company having to market, without them having to say a word because all the words are being said by people to each other, peer to peer. Has anyone been to SoulCycle here? Anybody? One, two. What's your experience been? Anybody? Just great. What was great about it?
Friendly, motivating, hot, like...
Okay.
You feel hot when you walk. It's like, oh, I'm so hot.
Literally hot, not the other hot.
No, hot. Like, I feel like I'm not. I look hot.
It's your ego.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah. I
literally call it a religious experience. My first class changed my life. I cried.
Tell me.
Talk about it. It's just so empowering, and it's so positive, and they just push you in a positive way. It's not like work harder. It's like, we can do this. Like,
right. We.
You on the other side at the end of the class. You're going
for it. Everybody hyped it up, so I was like, that's gonna be amazing. And I got there like, that's it.
Well, you probably came in with a very high expectation level, so the...
Preaching.
Right.
Cycle. That I was like, okay, I'll get in. I was disappointed.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because you mentioned we. Look at the words they use. Army, which is this collective of people that acts together to accomplish a mission. Love, another strong word that ties into people's emotions. So think of they have religiosity in mind. That's why I use this picture. There's a bunch of other ones that I could have used. But their language, and when I say language, not just the words, but the music, the lighting, the spacing in the room, all of those things are built with psychological prompts and psychological constructs specifically to trigger certain emotions and to trigger that group mentality. So now it's your turn. Let's do a little exercise. Please take out either a piece of paper or a notepad app. So on your phone, I'm sure all of you guys have a notepad app or just a blank email, anything where you can jot down notes. And I'm going to give you a little bit of time to fill this out. I'm going to ask you the first question. Who is your tribe? Now, think about your business. Who are the people you're trying to reach? And even if you haven't reached them yet, or if you're just thinking about a business proposition, who is your ideal tribe? I told you about a bunch of the religious-like tribes that are forming out there. Which of them are yours? Or maybe not one of them. Maybe it's another one that I didn't think of. Tell me what they're tribal about. What is it that they get really worked up over? Now, it could be positive or it could be negative. It could be something that really pisses them off or really gives them some sort of sense of euphoria or pleasure. How can you show that you share their passion? Is there a way that you can connect these passionate people to each other? If you could afford anything, what is the one thing you could do that can tap into their zealotry, their willingness to tell people about you? Let me step out of the way. To tell people about you without those people ever asking. That's it. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy it, share it with others, subscribe, and please review it on iTunes or your favorite platform. It really helps get more audience for the show. And of course, support the show on Patreon. There's so many great bonus episodes on there. I will be putting more on there for all of the subscribers. Thank you so much. It's just patreon.com/McFuture. See you later this week on the McFuture. I'm Steve Factor. Oh, and after the outro, some testimonials from the workshop.
I really got a lot out of the workshop. It really got me thinking about how we can really cultivate our customers, turn them into advocates, and really get them to be passionate about what we do. We're passionate about what we do, and we want to get more people involved. So it was a really very motivational workshop. Thanks for doing it.
I thought it was excellent. For me, it was very informative, and it encouraged me to speak out more about what I'm doing. A lot of questions were answered before I could even ask them. That's when I think the value is there.
My takeaway from it was it was simple, but it was profound, and it really emphasized the need for really carving out that, I guess you could say, tribal space for your audience to tap into, to plug into. My takeaway from it was you look at everything that's going on in the world, you find your niche in that, and you find a way to plug your audience into it in a meaningful way that gives them purpose and that makes them feel like they're part of a whole.
In taking Steve's class, what I've learned is that the five questions that he asked us was, I could take those questions and apply it to my business directly. Not only apply it to my business, but I could apply it to my website. Those things, those information that you gave us was able to help each and everybody in that room because they are something that can be applicable right away. Not something you don't have to wait to tomorrow, not something you have to wait to yesterday. You can apply it each and every day, and it can make your business grow, and you can develop your business, and then you can become a business that can become successful just because of those things and questions you asked us and the information that you gave us on that day. So to me, as a business owner, president of a new start company, I was just amazed at the simplicity of what you had to say. Because most people are looking for some gigantic, gargantuan kind of answer to the building of the business, but you put it in a simplistic way that each and every person can apply it. That's what I liked about it, and I wish it was an hour and 45 minutes instead of just 45 minutes. And I look forward to seeing more Steve Factor's workshops in the near future.
I love the session today because it really validated the brand identity that I have created for myself, but it validated in a way that right now people are looking for purpose. And purpose brings a tribe together. When people are, when you can offer something that will fulfill the purpose what they're looking for, they are more likely to purchase what you have to offer, to listen to what you have to offer, also to share with their friends and family, and help you grow your own tribe effortlessly.